You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. Outdoor Edge knows that providing a freezer full of meat is part of the reason we all hunt. And what better way to bring it full circle than to process your own wild game? Outdoor Edge provides a full lineup of traditional and replaceable blade hunting knives and complete wild game processing kits to bring your wild game from the field to the freezer. Visit OutdoorEdge.com and at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30 for 30% off.
This is the Houndsman XP Podcast.
Good dog, get that bird. Get that bird in here.
The original podcast for the complete Houndsman. The podcast that represents our lifestyle of extreme performance.
Get up there! Yeah! Yeah! Good boy!
Good boy, Ranger!
Uniting houndsmen across the globe, from east to west, north to south.
You know, if you're going to catch a cat or a lion, you know, you have to have teamwork.
We take you to the wildest places on earth.
Yeah, so how many days a week do you spend out there?
As much as I can, to be honest with you. Anytime that I get, I'm out there.
Join us for every heart-pounding adventure on Houndsman XP.
I'll tell you like I tell everyone else, I'm going to hunt whether you're here or not, so you might as well be here.
Hey, everybody, welcome. It's good to see you here. This is it. The show that we've been talking about for about 2 weeks now, it's here. This is me and Lauren's new variety show called All Mixed Up. I'm going to keep this pre-roll brief. It's a great show that has a lot of different aspects to it, different segments. And today's theme is moving forward. It's a good metaphor for Houndsman XP, our lives with dogs, and, well, everything, really. So sit back, everybody, and enjoy. This is the first installment of many. And we are very excited to bring it to you as a part of the Houndsman XP Podcast Network. Thanks for coming and enjoy.
The Houndsman XP Podcast is fueled by Joy Dog Food. Joy Dog Food has a rich tradition of supporting the Houndsman of America. Founded in 1945, Joy is proud of its history and the relationship it has built with the American Houndsman. And in 76 years, there's never been a recall. Made with 100% American-made high-quality ingredients, Joy Dog Food has one of the highest calorie-dense formulas on the market. For 76 years, this made-in-America product has kept hunting dogs in the field day after day, season after season. And when we say made in America, Joy has a long track record of fighting for American freedoms by being on the front lines against the animal rights movement and their extremist tactics. Joy will fuel your hounds and fight for your freedoms, fueled by Joy.
Lauren Vranny is in the house. What's up, dude?
Hey, Seth. This will be a new fun experience, won't it?
It will. I'm very excited to announce the launch of our new show. We're calling it All Mixed Up. It's going to be a variety show that's got tons of different segments, tons of different little bits and pieces that are all following a similar theme. Lauren, why don't you break down this month's theme?
This month's theme is moving forward. So we've got a bunch of segments in here for you guys. You're going to enjoy, and everything's going to be connected, but at the same time mixed up, because look who you're listening to. You've got Seth and Lauren, right?
The king and queen of random and energy, I feel.
Yeah. So hopefully this will be exciting, and I'm really excited to hear what we've got in store for everybody on this episode.
Me too. I'm looking super forward to it. Chris has been graciously announcing and that we got some in the pipeline, and we have two on Patreon. So here it is, and here it comes. We're pretty excited to bring it to you guys. So I guess we can totally get started. I'm going to break the ice with a little bit of HXP happenings here. I just want everyone to know, by the time you hear this episode, I will be right on the cusp of heading to British Columbia to represent Houndsman XP and Freedom Hunters. I am unbelievably excited for that, and I can't wait. This will be my first time leaving the United States, and it'll also be my first time seeing a bear in a tree, I hope. And so,
right.
I know you've left the U.S. Where have you gone, Lauren?
Oh, well, I haven't gone anywhere outside of the U.S. to hunt. So my major in university was Spanish. So that's helped me in my travels abroad. What I've gone to Mexico, Puerto Rico, Panama, Costa Rica, Ecuador. I haven't been to Canada, so I'm kind of jealous of you there, but you know.
I don't know how much Spanish you can use in Canada.
Well, yeah, it wasn't
tacos, burritos, the classics.
Right. So, yeah, Canada will be a good experience for you, and British Columbia, from what I've seen and my friends that are there, it's just absolutely stunning.
I hope so too. I know it's going to be raining the whole time, so I'm not too pumped for that. But it was raining the whole time I was in Oregon, and I still had a great
time. I was
time.
Just going to say, like, you've got rain gear. You'll be fine. And you'll be fine. And by the time this episode is dropping, I'll be at a convention for the Wisconsin Conservation Congress.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
You're just going to be keeping your ear down and paying attention to what's moving on forward there.
Yep. So it's really neat. Kind of moving forward with my career, I guess you could say, in conservation and my interest in conservation. And I'm a delegate for Dodge County. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be my first experience there. So I'm going to just be all ears, and wherever I can help, I can. But it's the first time that I will ever experience any of this. So I just am excited to see how all of this works, especially when it comes to the spring hearings and how Wisconsin and the Conservation Congress is going to be more moving forward with those results.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. Wisconsin has such a charged atmosphere when it comes to the outdoors, I've noticed. And I'm very fortunate. I live in a state that has a little bit more of a laid back atmosphere, but I am super glad that someone with your energy and enthusiasm is there to represent hound hunting in the great state of Wisconsin. Lauren, also, I wanted to bring up some cool stuff here. For Houndsman XP moving forward, we're also bringing on two new awesome guests. And I'm very excited. Two or three? Am I that out of the loop? But possibly three.
Three. It possibly could be three from what I'm hearing in the pipeline.
Well, you heard us talk about it in our last Point Blank OG3, which, by the way, great, great title. So
that was all wait. Chris.
Heath, Alex, I can't wait for those two guys. I know them very well from the show. And also Alex, I know on a more personal level, we've chatted quite a bit. That guy is awesome. And he's going to be bringing cool content from the land down under. He is so...
And totally like international, not just...
Yeah, I was going to say, he's so well-traveled.
Mm-hmm.
Super smart guy. And then there's announcements from the coon hunting world too.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to learn a lot. With us being so new in this, I think having these people have their own shows, everybody's going to learn a lot. And it's just going to be super well-rounded network. So we've got Steve Burkholder coming in.
Awesome.
The guy with the 10-gallon hat or 5-gallon hat. I don't know what they're called. But yeah, so Steve's coming in. And then we've got Heath Hyatt to cover
yes.
pretty much everything that leads up to right before you drop that tailgate.
Which is, I would say, 80% of hunting with dogs, maybe 60%, I suppose, depending on the breed and the type you're hunting.
That's a fair analysis.
Bird dogs way more. Sighthounds maybe slightly less. I think we may have the easiest training regimen of all time. See them, get them.
Probably. And your dogs are just so relaxed when they're at home too. They're pretty chill most of the time. Not all the time. I love that about them.
That's my favorite thing about sighthounds. I got six of them in the house right now and they haven't made a peep.
That's awesome.
Four sighthounds. But anyway, yeah, they're the best. And I'm not going to let this go, this segment for HXP Happenings, without, I got to, speaking of those mutants, I'm so pumped. You guys, I got to bring this up.
Are you getting a puppy?
What's up?
Are you getting a puppy?
No. Oh my gosh. Okay. No. I have been running just my two Salukis, and the patrons listening to this, they already are getting a taste of this excitement. I've been running just my two Salukis. They have coming into their prime. Strider is now 2.5 almost, and Comet is almost 2. And those two boys have been just slamming. And I am so proud of them. It feels amazing. I just was so excited to see what my life with just purebred Salukis was going to be like. And I'm going to be honest here, and this is just the way it is, but I'm becoming a believer. I think I'm really loving my Salukis a lot. Their durability is definitely their best feature. And they have been slaying hares. They caught two, put one in a hole. The patrons are already seeing some of that slow motion footage, some of those full on races. I've been getting it with a GoPro, and it has me on cloud nine. Every time I look at those two sleeping on the couch, I just want to go over there and pat them on the head and tell them how good they are and how proud of them I am. I know that sounds so corny because they're dogs, but man, they just make me so happy, and I'm super pumped about it.
Yeah, so bear training season here starts July 1st, but I've kind of been tuning up Piper and Ridge to, because we took a break after coon season ended, but I've been tuning them back up for coon hunting right now, just to see and push them kind of just to their limits and see what they can do and see where they excel, just so I learn them better. And I might be putting them in some competition hunts. I don't know. But it's kind of been fun just to hunt the two of them and not take a huge pack of dogs out, or not just take one dog out, because these two are split treeing, which is a good thing when you're doing coon hunting.
Yeah.
But I also know that they do honor, especially when in a bear pack. So it'll just be interesting to see how everything plays out this year.
Heck yeah, dude. I River is looking unbelievable. I've got kind of gushed about it a little bit 2 weeks ago, but man, she's looking so beautiful. I love her color pattern, and her body's just amazing.
Yeah, she's got a great bod. She's hot. No, she's one of the best looking dogs that I have. Like, screw the rest of them. Like, she is the cake topper. She's perfect.
Poor Cedar and her weird eyes.
Yeah, she's a little weird. Oh yeah, and I finished Ridge to confirmation champion in the dog show.
That.
Yeah. Nice. So that was good. But yeah, what else do we have to talk about, Seth, today? Because I know we've got some kind of fun stuff to talk about.
I couldn't agree more. Let's get right into it. Here comes the news. All right, guys, we got some cool news we're going to talk about here. Lauren, why don't you break us off? You are the undisputed queen of the internet when it comes to the HXP troop. No one even comes close to you. And the story you sent me today, I read it and I literally just, I didn't spit out my coffee, but I made that same sound. It's so ridiculous. Talk about the puppy.
Yeah, the puppy. So they thought. So a Massachusetts family thought they rescued a stray puppy. Okay, good for them. Great. It turned out to be a coyote or a coyote or a coyote, however you call them. So that was a surprise, I'm sure.
Massachusetts family was surprised to learn that a lost puppy they rescued was, in fact, a baby coyote. The male.
Now, how many of you guys know the difference between like a dog, a puppy dog, and a wild coyote?
I mean,
I hope a lot of our listeners, right?
Yeah.
Because like we're in the outdoors, we're connected to nature, we're not completely, you know, urban gorillas, right?
Yeah, we're like wild gorillas with the G-U-E spelling.
Right. So it was a male coyote pup. It was found wandering and distressed on the side of the road. And there's a Facebook post about it.
I mean, I'm not going to be too critical on him because, you know, everyone knows don't mess with wildlife and take it from someone who works with wildlife. If you see wildlife, just leave them alone. I know it sucks, but that's nature. But I mean, they genuinely thought it was a dog. And so they picked it up. I just think that's hilarious. I mean, I don't know if they can keep it legally in the state of Massachusetts, but I would. That'd be awesome.
I highly doubt it because like the Massachusetts regulations, even for trapping and stuff, like if they have some of the highest regulations for that, or maybe they outlawed trapping. I don't know. Someone correct me. But chances are you can't keep a coyote as a pet unless you're like a wildlife rehabber.
Yeah, probably.
So they picked it up, they put it in their car, and then shortly later they realized, oh, this might not be a dog. And sure enough, yeah, it wasn't. But just like let wildlife be, you know, let nature take its course type of thing when it comes to like, don't go and try and save baby fawns and let the eagle eat, you know, this little squirrel or whatever it is. You don't have to go and save everything.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I mean, it's kind of hard to say no to a puppy, but yeah, I'm actually looking right now at Massachusetts' wildlife laws. And just like New Mexico's, pretty much all you can keep in the like animals from the wild Massachusetts are herps. So rodents and reptiles and amphibians. So you got to have a permit to own a coyote, like you were saying.
So, got it.
Yep.
So yeah, happening. This pup is going to be rehabbed and it's going to be brought up with another pup that they already had and then hopefully then released. But it was funny. I saw that and I'm like, man, I really want to know who these people are. Like, what do they look like? Where do they live? Why are we so disconnected with nature that, you know, Anyway.
Yeah. I just think it's
moving on.
Yeah. Moving on. Going to the next law.
Yeah, what do we've got next?
Well, we've got this. A California lawmaker proposes a dog and cat bill of rights. The first thing I'm going to say is only in California would someone decide they need to codify something like that.
Yeah, and this isn't super new news. It's kind of been circulating, but we wanted to talk about it because come on. But, you know, California and Vermont and Massachusetts, like things start there. Like that's the nucleus of this animal rights.
Definitely agree with that
thing. And it's going to spread. But like, yeah, it's kind of a virtue signaling thing. So what's in the Bill of Rights?
Bill of Rights. Well, I'm just going to paraphrase. Actually, it's had some word changing from have the right to deserve, which is actually a good word changing. Less arrogant, but you know, I think it kind of boils down to like, you know, dogs and cats deserve to be free from exploitation, cruelty, neglect, and abuse. Dogs and cats deserve a life of comfort, free of fear and anxiety. Dogs and cats deserve mental stimulation and appropriate exercise, considering the age and energy level of the cat or dog. They deserve nutritious food, sanitary water. Look, okay. All this stuff.
I agree.
Yeah. Who doesn't agree with that? Here's the thing. These kinds of laws can be loopholed. They can be pigeonholed to fit someone's agenda. The place that it's going to be, dogs and cats deserve to be free from exploitation, cruelty, neglect, or abuse. You're going to look at the obvious ones. Oh yeah, don't neglect them and beat them up. But someone could interpret that in a court of law being exploitation or cruelty to hunting with a dog. How many people think that you like force them to go hunting? And it's totally absurd. And I just feel like, why does this stuff have to be codified in law? Why can't we just like accept these principles of animal ownership and like they don't need to be a law? That's like what gets me so annoyed, because then once it becomes a law, people will use it as a weapon to crush their like, you know, people that don't hold similar belief systems as them, i.e. us. Mm-hmm. And I mean, right. I'm not advocating for hunters. Anybody, I'm not even going to say hunters. I'm going to say anybody who mistreats an animal like that, that's messed up. But to their interpretation of what is exploitation and cruelty is a lot different than ours. I feel.
Yeah, definitely. You're right. Codifying this into law is just, I think there just needs to be a better movement on education and outreach, and a lot of the problem, like, the bill is apparently in response to millions of dollars spent every year to euthanize or otherwise control the booming number of dogs and cats. Okay. We know that there's like tons of stray dogs and like backyard bred dogs, no matter the breed, whether it's doodles, bully breeds, Labradors, there's backyard bred golden retrievers, all these puppy mills. Like, that's where we need to start. A bill of rights is really not where we need to start. We need to start with education and outreach and people knowing that adoption isn't the only way, and adoption actually supports backyard breeders and unethical breeders, but going for well-bred, ethically bred, responsibly bred dogs actually will help curb that, because real good breeders won't let their dogs be mistreated, won't let their dogs go to places where they'll be mistreated, and they won't go into shelters either. So then you're not spending all this money. Because
I think
they're
the main takeaway from
homes.
This for hound hunters is just, guys, make sure that you're putting your best foot forward with your dog setups. I mean, that's just simple, right? And don't let unneutered and unspayed animals out into the public, because that is the biggest just, hit. That's like shooting ourselves in the foot.
So, just be responsible.
Yeah.
We all have intact dogs. It's actually fairly easy to control the dynamic between your pack.
My dogs can run 40 miles an hour and jump like 1,000 feet in the air, and they are kept in a secure fence in their 5-acre yard, and it's not a problem. You know what I mean? Like, it's just put our best foot forward and make sure you're, I think if your mom would see your dog set up, would she be all right with it?
Totally. And, yep.
Call it good. Let's move on to the next one. I think these next two are the most important we want to get to. Why don't you break down the next one for us here?
Yeah. So unfortunately, guys, Delaware is moving forward with a barking bill. So this isn't just like an urban area. This isn't just a municipality. This is the entire state of Delaware, guys. So it's House Bill 378, and it's legislation to fine owners for a dog that barks more than 15 minutes. And it's actually a mandate then for police departments to enforce the law. Now, you'd think, okay, there's going to be exemptions, whether it's location-wise, whether it's hunting-related, whatever. Right now, the only exemption in there is for dogs barking at intruders and dogs who are provoked. So here, I had two examples. Let's say someone lives in a rural area. They're on like 120 acres. No one can hear the dogs, outside of their property. But someone who's a Karen, or who knows, is walking by or riding their ATV or their bike, and they hear these hounds barking, and they're like, I'm going to get them. There's no exception for that. Also, there's no exception for hunting. So technically, a dog baying or barking during a hunt would be subject to violation. $100 for first offense. Second offense is $200 and $300 for each offense after that. It's just entirely unnecessary. Just stay in touch with Sportsman's Alliance, follow them on Instagram. Remember, they've got a website too. And if you go there, you can find the list of all the representatives that you need to contact.
And I'm just going to say this, Delaware hound hunters, like, you guys, look, nobody likes their neighbor's dog barking all night. Like, we get that. This law doesn't have a ton. It has some aspects of it that sound incredibly appealing. One thing, though, is you need to get mobilized to get amendments put into this law that protect your hunting dogs, because somebody could use that as a weapon to not be so kind to your hunting dogs that have something treed. So that's all
and
we're saying.
Just put your best foot forward. No one likes, we don't like barking dogs all the time. That's why we invest in bark collars.
Yeah. Well, so, my buddy's neighbor hasn't, trust me. Oh my gosh. Just her two chihuahuas barking all night. I was just hoping a great horned owl would come down and take them both out. Oh my gosh.
One day. It could happen.
It's true. My friend's chihuahua named Hercules, when we were little kids, we were bouncing on his trampoline. Hercules got jacked by a great horned owl. So first hand example,
like,
it can happen.
Like picked up, taken away, flown away, and never to be seen again.
Never to be seen again. Gone.
Broad daylight?
No, in the middle of the night.
Oh, okay.
My parents used to love playing a card game called Rummy. And we'd have like these big gatherings every Saturday night, and the kids would all go play, and we were all bouncing on a trampoline, and Hercules got eaten by an owl right by us, dude.
Well, maybe chihuahuas don't need to exist.
Horrible dog. Doesn't need, needless to say, because he was a chihuahua, but
yeah,
he was a horrible dog. So I wasn't sad to see Hercules go. I hope the owl had a nice feast.
It's a good story. It's a good story. And then, of course, I mean, you're talking to a girl from Wisconsin here, so we have to talk about wolves, right?
Let's break it down. Speaking of Sportsman's Alliance.
Yeah. Thank you, Sportsman's Alliance, for everything that you're doing and the communications that you're keeping out.
Absolutely.
So you might have seen, I did post on like our Facebook group, the Biden administration issued a notice of appeal in the lower 48 wolf case. So that case that went to California, and the judge was like, yep, nope, wolves are going back on the ESA. Nothing can be done about it. Bing, bang, boom. Well, apparently the Biden administration has issued a notice of appeal. So it doesn't even mean they've appealed it yet, but they said that they're going to. So we'll see what happens. You know, we can only cross our fingers and hope for the best. I'm not holding my breath, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I think it's a good step in the, it's a good step in the right direction. But I think this is maybe a rare example where putting your money on the science is beating political views, I hope. So we'll see how that goes. But that would be awesome. That's definitely, I'm just, with an animal like wolves that are so controversial and obviously rebounding throughout the range with protection, which they do need at times, I think
in certain areas, yeah,
I think it's better to kind of leave that to the states. Because animals like these are definitely there's a huge cultural aspect to them. And I just don't think that people in New York should be legislating what's happening in rural Montana. So that's just kind of my two cents about it from my limited scope of predator biology. But yeah. I'm not looking through. And
who knows when this is actually going to happen. You know, everybody saw that and they're kind of getting excited. I'm like, I'm not. Like, really, because right now nothing's changing. I'm still, July 1st is coming faster than you know it. And we are head on into this wolf situation. And I don't think it's going to be pretty. I'm not looking forward to bear training season as much as I normally do. Yeah. I mean,
I get it.
Just because of the wolf population.
I can empathize. I don't have that problem, but I can definitely empathize with you. That would be terrible. The only thing I got to worry about is barbed wire fences, and they don't run up to my tree and kill my dogs.
Right. Yeah. And I shared that video on our group too, of you can hear the hounds in the background and you can see the wolf just zoom right past the trail camera towards the dogs. And five dogs were taken in that area of that trail cam that year, I believe. So, and that was 2017. That's when the wolf population was like even lower than it is now. Yeah. But moving on.
Yes. Yes. So guys, we're going to just roll right into our second segment here. Lauren, if I can be so bold, I'm just going to roll it right in. The new segment is called New Dog in the Kennel. And Lauren sat down with a really good interview with her friend Kendall. And they just talked about all things getting started into dogs. And Lauren and her had a very similar story. So without further ado, let's roll right into it.
It's okay. Don't worry about it. Like, we've all been there. And like, if you were born in the limelight and that's what you're supposed to do, then you're not people like us, right?
Right.
Like, you don't live in the woods and you don't, like, walk through cow manure and, you know, you're not training dogs and making stuff out of coon fat and fur and who knows what else. You're just a different breed if you are automatically okay being interviewed and, you know, stick to it and do well with it right away. So,
yeah.
So we've been talking like kind of back and forth and just liking each other's stories and just kind of seeing each other's lives through Instagram. And that's how we met. And this is actually the first time that we're talking voice to voice, not even face to face. But what I was intrigued about and what I loved about your story is that it was so similar to mine, which is why I wanted to feature you on this, like, little segment that we're doing for our show. which is like new dog in the kennel, which could be like a new houndsman or a new puppy that you're starting to train. And I really liked your story because it was so similar to mine. And you got your first hound from where?
Yeah. Well, he is technically my first coon hound. I've had a couple dogs. I had a black and tan that has been a deer dog for me for, she's about 9 or 10 now. And I actually had a bird dog cross growing up that lived to be 20. We just put her down 2 years ago. Yeah. So dogs,
what is her secret?
I know, right? I think she was just obsessed with being with me. She wasn't ready to go. So that was wild because I had that dog for 2/3 of my life. You know, I'm 32, so
wow.
She was with me for a really long time. But as far as the hounds go, this black and tan I've had, I just got her as sort of a pet, whatever, maybe a deer dog. She actually blood trailed a deer at 11 weeks old for 3.5 hours.
On purpose, or she just happened?
Just accidentally. I had her with me, and I was crossing creeks with her. Her mama hated to cross a creek for whatever reason, so I had her out, and she was real little, and we were just going for a walk in the middle of deer season. It was a windy day, so it wasn't any good for hunting, and I took a poor shot at a deer, and basically, like, I couldn't find blood, couldn't find a thing, and she was with me, kind of just milling around, not really know what was going on. And all of a sudden, she just took off. I was like, where in the world is she going? She was 11 weeks old, you know, and she came back to me and she'd take off again. So I went to looking where she had been smelling and finally got on a really decent blood trail. And I was like, what, I guess 20. And I had just started hunting when I was 19. So I didn't know enough not to take poor shots then. But anyway, 4 hours later, we found the deer. And she stayed on the track the whole time. And she'd go 100 yards from me and come back. Go 100 yards, come back.
Yeah, but she was still on her mission the entire time. She just wanted to make sure you were on the mission, too.
Yeah. And to this day, I can go take her and find deer for people. She does the same thing to this day. She's a little slower. But anyway, so that was kind of my first, like, I don't know, exposure to, like, what the hounds are capable of. And me and that dog got pretty bonded. So
what was her name?
Gracie. She was just an old non-papered black and tan. But yeah, I still got her. And but with Timmy, I think the dog you were referring to, the walker dog.
Yeah. The male.
Yeah, the male. So I have a little farm here and I have some neighbors I farm with. And
your farm name?
Whippoorwill Farm.
Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted to bring in. Yep.
Yeah. Well, my neighbor, he farms with me. He's 71. He helps me a lot. And he had had a blue tick he was real fond of that had passed away unexpectedly. And I was like, I got to find him another hound. So we went to the county pound and they had the guy that told us up. He likes black and tans. And the guy had told us they had an old black and tan. I was like, let's go look at this dog. Well, we went up there and Timmy, the walker dog, was up there and he opened his mouth. And Donnie heard him. He's like, I want that one. I said, okay. So we brought him home. Well, a few months later, he's like, you know, I think that dog's been hunted some. Why don't you take him out and coon hunt him? I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I knew a little bit or whatever. I was like, whatever. I don't know. Well, I took him out one night. First thing he ever treed for me was a possum. But
that's
that
okay.
That first locate and hearing him on the tree and going to him, like, I was addicted. You know, I still have it on video, I think.
No way. And, you caught it on video. That's awesome. Did he?
Yeah,
did you even have a tracking collar or anything? Or you just went out like old school?
Yeah, I had actually, when it was training season for bear here. So I had actually been getting pictures of a bear. And I had taken him and Gracie just to see if they would mess with it, just for, you know, whatever,
right.
Something to do in the middle of the night. And later that night, they did run a bear. And later that night, I had got the dogs back. And, of course, they didn't know what they were doing. They ran, got to the main highway and came home. And at least we're pretty sure they ran a bear. But anyway, we were walking home, and I knew they were following me, and I heard him strike, and I sat there and just hit record, and I like listening to him. He's got a really pretty ball mouth. I know a lot of people might not like that, who competition hunt, but I love him. But I heard him strike, and I heard him locate, and I heard him tree, and that's the first time I'd ever really heard any of it. You know what I mean?
And the fact that you got all three at once, the strike and then, you know, the ball on track and the locate, which is, you know, I have a dog that won't locate, worth a darn. And then the tree, you got that all on video. Yeah. That was all. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I went to him and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And I think I hunted him every night after that for up until season ended. So it was like early December. I took him out that night and I hunted him every night and I just got way too addicted.
Do I know that disease or do I know it?
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. That's how it all kind of started with him. And then, sure enough, me and that dog got really tight, really fast. And so he quickly became my dog, and we ended up going back to the pound, getting the black and tan from my buddy. So a year later.
Yeah.
So you
got addicted, and now you're moving forward with hounds even more. This addiction is blossoming into quite a pack of dogs you've got, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. I even kind of made a job change a little bit to suit my addiction because I've been farming full time. Which you would think would be really conducive to hunting every night, but when you're kind of trying to make your own income and you're your own boss, it's just a lot of stress. And I had been working a seasonal job at a butcher shop and got offered on, you know, full time in January. And I said, you know, it'll be real nice to clock out at 5 and be able to hunt and not think about work. Mm-hmm. So that kind of drove me to do that a little bit, you know, so I'd have a little more income and yeah, and just really be able to focus on the dogs
kind of just take that cape off and leave it at work.
Yeah. So they definitely had, you know, some influence on that decision. For sure.
It's crazy how we change our lives to revolve around our dogs. Like I moved out from the city and, you know, I've changed. I used to travel the world. I used to go abroad all the time and now I can't do that really as easily, I guess I should say. And I've just tailored my life to my dogs. And now you've got another dog to tailor your life to, huh?
Yeah. Oh, the pup.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I guess maybe 2 months into hunting Timey every night, who, I mean, he'll still tree a fair amount. That dog doesn't like to go more than 1,500 yards from you, which is really nice, honestly, because when you don't hunt huge tracts of land, you know, it's kind of nice that I ain't got to worry about him leaving too much, but
yeah.
I'd gotten permission to hunt some other farms and stuff, and he got better and better throughout the season. I mean, he was treeing coons regularly. I shot quite a few to him, and he definitely got better and better. He'll still end up in a hole or tree possum or whatever, but I don't really care. I mean,
you're not a competition hunter, and, you know, a gamey dog is a fun dog, and that's what they were bred to do. You can't fault him for it. I think it's fun.
Oh, he's so fun, you know, and he would have been, he was on the kill list at the pound, so I mean, whatever, you know, we have a good time. He got me addicted. I think the nice thing about that dog is he's old enough and he's been hunted before. He has just by some of the things he does, but I don't feel like I can mess him up too much because he's an older dog. And that's been really nice to kind of learn and figure it out and do the wrong things and it not really hurt the dog too much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but he's nuts at a tree and I love that. I mean, and as soon as you get there, he goes even crazier. I mean,
yeah,
he will get you addicted.
He just like, just the videos I've seen, he just holds pressure and he just stands there. Like he's wild about it. You can tell he's wild about it, but he's not like crazy. Like my dogs that are jumping all over the place and falling on each other. And like, he's just a constant pressure dog.
Yeah. He's a really fun dog to hunt. I've had a good time with him. So, yeah, anyway, a month and a half into hunting him every night, I was like, man, if something happens to this dog, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know, because that had become really, I mean, a huge part of me just, like, being happy. And so I kept my eyes open for dogs and on Facebook or whatever, not too serious. And I had kind of decided I wanted a pup. I listened to y'all's podcast a bunch and talked to plenty of people. And I was like, you know, I think I could raise a pup and do okay with it. Learning from this older dog. That older dog's taught me a lot.
Sure. In the month and a half.
Yeah. I mean, every night, you know, that's a lot of hours.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a fast initiation, and it's a fast addiction.
Oh, definitely. And I'm kind of like you. I think you said in a message one time, like, I'd love to, I'd love to come out with you. I'd love to meet other people and join a club and stuff, but I really and truly just love being out there with my dog. And so
that's like,
it's kind of,
I love partying. I just say, like, I love partying with my dogs by myself. Like, I just like being alone with them, and that's fine. And, you know, I'll go hunt with some people here and there, but I get the most out of enjoyment just being out in nature with them by myself.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of funny. I spent a lot of time in the woods as a kid with that old dog I had for a long time. And so it's just kind of funny. I found myself doing what I was doing as a kid, you know, as an adult, you know, for fun. It's just kind of, I don't know, strikes me funny sometimes when I think about it. But yeah, I'd been looking around for pups, not too seriously or whatever. And there was a couple down in Franklin County I had followed. I think they had a picture on a few pages of like their niece with her hound with a bear on the truck. And I had kind of followed them on Instagram a little bit. Well, I saw they had a litter of pups for sale. So I just messaged them and it was in my price range. And I was like, well, I'm just going to go get a pup.
You just got to pull the trigger.
Yep. So needed a little project. So yeah, she's been a lot of fun. And
what'd you name her?
Holly.
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 And you had to come up with a paper name for her, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. We went with Whippoorwill's Wildwood Holly.
Love it. Yeah. Absolutely perfect. Is she living up to her name?
So far, she's very independent, very smart, not really into being with other dogs, which has been really cool. If I take her out with the older dogs, she'll usually stay by herself and do her puppy version of hunting. She doesn't have a lot of puppy play in her when you take her out, which is real interesting. But I've done a few scent drags with her and she's nailed those. And I know there's a lot of controversy over doing that with pups, but I mostly have been doing them just to see what she's capable of, see if she'll use her nose and stuff. And I've been really impressed with her. I had her out one day. I think I had messaged you about this. I had her out one day just going for a walk and I turned the older dog loose, figuring he'd go off and do his own thing or whatever. And it was a hot day too. And he treed and he had a coon in a den tree. And I went to catch him because it was kind of hot and I didn't want him to stay there too long. I knew he'd stay there all day. And I took the puppy up with me. And I've never hunted another dog with that timey dog. So I had no idea if he'd be, you know, aggressive or, you know, I never know what to expect out of him coming from the pound. So I was being a little careful taking her over there. And damn if she didn't get up on the tree with him and tree. She didn't know what she was doing, but she's got the instinct.
I know. So when you sent me that, I got this like little sparkly feeling through my whole body. I'm like, no way. This is so cool. Because like, I feel like I've never even had that happen. I mean, I haven't been hunting a long time. And how long have you been coon hunting, let's say?
Since December, I guess, is when I started hunting.
So you are brand spanking new.
Yeah, I got a lot to learn.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
But it sounds like you're learning quick and that old dog is teaching you a whole heck of a lot. And it's great that you got him to lead the way. And then you've got this puppy to help keep pushing you forward and moving forward in this addiction, this lifestyle, this crazy journey that we're all in together.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to tell people about it. You know, I don't think they really get it till you take them out with you one night, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what part of the country are you in? You said Franklin County.
No, I'm in Burkeville in Virginia, so okay. We're kind of in the Piedmont.
Okay. Yeah, I've never been to that area. But, yeah, so, you know, you're in ag, you do farming, you're out in, like, a rural area, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, still for you to say like it's hard for you to tell people about it and hard for people to understand it till you take them out, like, you know, for me, I come from the city and like a lot of my friends are city folk, so for me to say something like that, you'd be like, oh yeah, well that makes sense. But then someone like you who comes from like the area that you come from, it's kind of interesting to hear you say that.
Well, there's only really a few, I only really know a few older guys around here that used to coon hunt. They don't even have dogs anymore. And I've shown videos, you know, of Holly to them. And a couple of them have been out with Timey and they were kind of encouraging me to take that dog out. They're like, you know, he might just be a tree dog, but you need to hunt that dog. He'll only get better, you know, or encouraging me about Holly. And that's pretty much my only exposure to other coon hunters.
Sure.
You know?
What are your like longer ambitions with
Oh
this?
gosh.
Yeah, like what? Okay, like let's go like year, 1 year, and then like 3 years.
That's kind of
What do you
hard
want
to
to do?
say. I don't really know. You know, I'd love to come to Autumn Oaks, and I think I'd like to competition hunt one day. I think I could get really into that. I don't know.
Are you
I think
competitive in nature, like in general?
yes, I am.
Okay, all
I'm kind of
right.
a loner, but I do like to have goals, I think. And I think definitely I'm trying to not be too goal oriented with a pup. You know, I don't want to have expectations of her
Sure.
that I shouldn't. So I hate to like, you know, jump on that too quick. But I don't know. I think just getting that pup off to a good start
I
is kind of
think,
my goal for the year. You know,
honestly, I think you got a good one and you're on the right track.
and I think I've been thinking about this a lot too lately. I think finding other people like you or people who will come let me hunt with them, you know, go hunt with some other people, some other dogs, learn from some other people. And hopefully maybe that means traveling a little bit, you know, or whatever. But like I said, I do have a farm, so it's kind of if I some of these goals are going to require a lot of moving things around and, you know,
Sure.
changing up life a little bit. But yeah, it sounds crazy when you talk about it,
Yeah,
but
and like currently you don't necessarily have like a mentor like by you that,
oh
is
no,
totally
I
involved.
listen. Yeah, like the podcast, Instagram, anything I can get my hands on, like social media or podcast wise, I just try to take it all in and then
Great.
figure out what makes sense to me, you
Yeah, you
know,
can cherry
with
pick.
my understanding of dogs. And I think having you and like other females and like knowing there's other women out there doing this solo has been really helpful, because just in the hunting community around here, I mean, you don't there are very few women hunters that I know personally. So
Totally.
and actually, speaking of that, I really want to have like an all ladies coon hunt like twice a year. Like, and take, you know, other girls out that have never been. That's kind of another
That, oh
goal.
my gosh, that would be so awesome to organize, and I would be full game. Like, I would love to plan that with you or, however we can make it work. There is a pink hunt. I think it's in Ohio every year. It's a competition hunt, though, and bench show. So there is like an all women's like competition event for coonhounds when or if you decide to broach that part of the sport. But it I think that's great to bring up that we can, kind of talk about this lifestyle as far as, women and get involved just as women and just meet each other and hunt with each other and form a bond that way.
Yeah, no, I just think I know some people who would really enjoy it, you know, who might not get invited by somebody else.
Yeah.
That's kind of my thinking
Yeah,
with
I
that.
think
But
between you, me, and a couple other girls, I think we can get a good group of women together.
no, that would be awesome.
That would be so awesome. Okay, message me so that's in my mind so we can keep working on this because you have that idea. I did not even have that idea. That's awesome.
Well, and you've got the dogs. So definitely.
I mean, I have them. It doesn't mean that they're good.
Well, that's the thing about it, really, I think, for pleasure hunting, is they don't have to be good
Right.
for you to have a good time, you know. And I think
Right.
I'm kind of trying to, that would be my hesitation getting into the competition hunts, is just remembering why I'm doing it, you know.
That's why I enjoy just like going out and hunting. Like I just hunted a lot in the winter for pleasure, just to like let the dogs work and see what would happen. And I don't necessarily enjoy the competition stuff. It's, I don't know, it's not totally my cup of tea, but I'll do it to prove my dogs if I know that they can be proven that way. And kind of just my mentor has done so much to breed what I've got for 60 years that I kind of owe it to him to do it too. So,
Well, and I think you always owe it to a good dog, you know.
good
If they're
point.
good enough, then they should be in it, you know.
Yeah. I
For
mean, you
sure.
at least have to try and see if they've got what it takes and if they aren't, what's made for competition now or what will work for competition now? Who cares? Just go hunt your dog in the pleasure format and have a good time and get out in nature and let that dog be happy.
Yeah.
Dang, you've got such a cool story. And the fact that you've only been hunting for like not even a year, right?
Yeah, with the coon hunting for sure.
Yeah.
I've mostly just deer and bow hunted, you know.
And then you haven't even been doing that long. You weren't a hunter like growing up, it sounded like.
No, my brother hunted. I really didn't. I didn't really get into it till I was about 19.
Yeah.
So
I think I was like 25 when I got into it. So yeah, just late. I mean, 19's not that late in life, but it's not like you've been hunting since you were 5 years old.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
But in the coon hunting too, it's just so accessible. I mean, you don't need a whole lot of stuff, you know, and you just need one dog really mm-hmm. to go have a good time. And I don't know. I just like the simplicity of it really.
Do you ever want to go bear hunting?
Oh, that is, yes.
Okay.
You just struck a nerve. I am dying to go see a bear in a tree with some dogs under it. Like, that's.
Well, that you live in a state something. That you can do it. So if you can find your connections, I know getting into a bear hunting crowd is kind of clicky and tough.
Definitely. Yeah.
You've got to see it. I mean, I never thought that I would be a bear hunter. I started and I was like, I'm going to be a competition coon hunter. And that's what I thought I was going to do my whole life. And then I got out bear hunting one time with my ex-boyfriend. And I was like, this is pretty cool. And then the next year I did it with my dog and I kind of got over the wolf thing for a little while and did it. And now I'm hooked, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, bears are one of my favorite animals for sure. And we're getting a whole lot more around here than we used to have. I killed one with the bow last fall, which is crazy to me because growing up we never saw bears. So
congrats.
Yeah, they're just amazing. I love bears, and I mean coons are kind of not really, people don't think about them being similar, but you can use all parts of them. I mean the hide, the meat, the fat, everything.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about that, like how you've learned to use the coon in your minimal experience in time in this whole coon hunting shenanigan.
Well, I guess I didn't mention in the beginning of the show or whatever, but I do work in a butcher shop. But I've always done work with my hands, all the jobs I've had. And I got really into using bear fat during deer season. We do deer at the butcher shop, and most of the people who kill bear didn't want the fat back. So I was bringing it home and rendering it down.
Ooh,
and using
that is
it for
gold.
Everything. Yeah, and the first coon I cleaned that we killed, I killed with Timey. I'm like, dang, these things are a whole lot like bear, you know, just everything about them, the meat, the fat, the hide. So I started saving the fat off of them. And I haven't done a whole lot of cooking with the coon fat because I've got so much bear grease here, but it's great. Like, it basically, the properties are really similar to bear. I mean, you can use it in your boots. You can make candles. I mean, anything like that. And yeah, I mean, you can get a pile of fat off of one coon. I think that big sow I posted about we killed, she had, what did I say, like at least a pint of fat off her?
Rendered.
So, yeah. No, just
oh,
raw fat.
Okay.
Yeah, off of one sow. So I was kind of blown away at that. I'm like, man, this stuff's just getting thrown away, wasted, or whatever. So, I was cleaning them, saving the fat. We would eat the sows, just like almost like we would squirrel.
Sure. Yeah.
It's
I've
really
eaten
similar.
Them too.
I'd say the meat is real similar, like to bear and squirrel, if you were to combine those two together. And most of the hide, I've tanned half the hides of the coons I've killed with Timey this year. And that's been a lot of fun for me because I just love working with my hands. So I've been enjoying that. And I don't know, maybe keep them, make stuff out of them for people. I don't know. But I couldn't throw any of it away. I just can't. I'm not that kind of person. So
that's so awesome. Like, you got into this and you went even deeper down, head first, diving into it than I did. You know, you're getting your hands dirty, which, you know, was part of your lifestyle and your job in the first place. But, you know, to use these resources, the fur, the hide, the fat, and just go all in and eat it too. Like, girl, you are amazing. This is wild.
Well, I was raised by my grandmother, waste not, want not, you know.
All right.
I wouldn't say I'm a prepper necessarily, but I do think, you know, keeping that kind of knowledge alive is probably important, or will be one day.
I agree.
Think, but
no, I think we can all agree on that. Let's see, we're in May now. What's the one thing that you're really looking forward to by the end of coon season.
I think seeing if Holly will tree a coon by herself before the end of the year. She'll be a year on New Year's Day. So I think I'm just waiting for the leaves to fall so I can see what's in the tree, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man, it's going to be fun. I hope you get to catch it on video. If not, you know, it'll be in your memory forever. But I am so looking forward to watching your journey with these dogs. And where can people find you on Instagram? If they want to follow along, too.
It's Whippoorwill Farm, I think, right? I think that's what it is right now. But I don't remember how Instagram made me spell it. Maybe you can.
Let's take a look. Hold on. Because that's how we found each other.
Yeah, I think I want to say like maybe I listened to your story on Houndsman XP and I was like, oh man, this is awesome. I got to talk to this chick. So I found you on Instagram.
Yeah, it's Whippoorwill FRM.
Yeah, that's
it. Yep, and Kendall Wynn. Is Wynn your last name or your middle name?
Last name.
Okay. Yeah, and she's got Timey and Holly and Gracie, the black and tan, which I haven't seen a whole lot of. Right?
Yep.
And then you're just all in into this lifestyle, and I love it. And thank you so much for interviewing for this short little segment. And I'm excited to see how you keep moving forward.
Yeah. Thanks for connecting. And also just thanks for answering my questions when I reached out. I do know that that's a little weird when strangers message you online, but I mean, that was really helpful for me to get advice from you. So
yeah,
I appreciate that.
At this point, it happens quite a bit and I'm happy to do it, especially if I know like you've got good intentions and you're a genuine person. So yeah, I'm anytime. And if I don't know the answer, I know maybe my answer isn't good enough. I'll get you the answer.
Somehow. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call.
Yeah.
I love hearing the beginnings. It's still exciting. I mean, I'm not that far from the beginning myself. And so I still get really excited to see people coming in to the lifestyle and just loving
it. Isn't it crazy that she got started hunting just in December and here we are in May and she's already that hooked on it?
Yeah, well.
I mean, we both got hooked that fast too, but still. Yeah.
I saw my first rabbit race and I was a freaking addict right then. But I do. I love it. And I personally love talking to beginners. I have like a fascination with the excitement and energy of beginners and the wisdom and been there, done that vibes of people that have been doing it for 40 plus years. I enjoy very much both ends of that spectrum. So thanks, Lauren. That was really awesome.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, what do we got cooking, Seth?
I'm not gonna add any more filler than I need to, guys. I want to move right into the next segment. The next segment is going to be a segment called Terrier Underground. I brought in a good friend of mine, Nate Valley. We've talked before. Patrons have heard him before. And we're going to talk about his views on the Jack Russell Terrier moving forward. Nate, welcome to the Houndsman XP podcast, the all mixed up variety show, brother. How you doing?
Good, Seth.
We had a little bit of a mix up, but we got it all figured out. And I think actually this may be a blessing in disguise. So we're here. I'm using some fancy pants, super fast internet. And I'm just glad we all made it work out.
Yeah, it's good to be here talking to you.
We're going to follow a theme for this episode. And this month is going to be moving forward. And with that theme, we're just going to be focusing on how different aspects of our lifestyle is going to be moving into the future and ideas and plans we have. So before we get there, why don't you introduce yourself, brother? Give yourself a little backstory. Our patrons remember you, but this is your first time debuting to the wide world.
No, I'm Nate Valley. I'm from Michigan, up in the thumb. And I work Jack Russell Terriers, underground, preferably. Usually on groundhogs, raccoons, possums, and occasional fox.
You're a man of many talents, brother. And one thing I like is that you mix two different complete styles of dogs. You're working a long dog in a place that you wouldn't really expect it. So I don't want to go down that road too far because I could spend a million hours talking about that dog you got from Michael. But why don't you explain briefly how you hunt with your dogs? And then I'm going to get right to questioning you.
Yeah, definitely. So I cast my dogs out in front of me, usually, you know, right at my feet, out 40, 50 yards. And they're just looking for a hot track, trying to find a groundhog that slipped into a hole or any little critter that they can go after. And, you know, keep them close so I can see them enter the ground. And also I have a lurcher that we just mentioned, Kate. She's a long dog. I use her as a lurcher. She goes out in front of the terriers. She'll find the holes and let us know if something's there.
It's pretty cool that she uses her nose. That's something that our dogs really aren't known for. I love to see the versatility a lot.
Yeah, she's a very, very versatile tool in what I call my toolbox of dogs.
Is she has no problem catching any of your bolting game, unless they get into the heavy stuff, I'm assuming, huh?
Well, even then, she'll if it doesn't slip into no other hole, she'll track it down and have it caught.
That's
real
awesome.
Quick. Yeah.
I gotta rein it in, brother. I gotta rein it in. I don't know if people know this, but I love sighthounds.
Yes, they're incredible.
So I'm gonna ask you a question that is, let's get this interview rocking and rolling. I'm gonna ask you the first question that I took a little inspiration from Chris's episode when he was at the Bear Hunters gathering, but the first question is, what makes a great terrier? The foundation of moving forward.
For me personally, drive is the number one key component. If you not have drive, you can't have a good quality working dog, in my opinion. And everything else will follow. If you have the drive, you can add in other things, or else you can make the other things come. So that drive is crucial. You're talking about terriers that are going down into confined spots, so they have to have a lot of drive to do it themselves with the grit.
So explain exactly what drive means to some, because drive to a sighthound or to a coonhound may be different than drive to a terrier. What in that definition are you looking for specifically for a terrier?
Yep. So the drive to be able to push into the ground and pursue an animal, you know, without hesitation. If it gets really tight, they're able to dig through the tight spots and just push. You know, do everything they have to get to that animal. Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, coming out of the ground, going back in. They're just, their focus. And the only thing they want to do is get to that animal. And they're going to do everything they can to get there.
Yeah. I love how tough they are.
That is my, you know, perspective of drive for a terrier. And throwing in that drive, the grit. Groundhogs like to dig away from a dog. They need to be able to keep that animal occupied until I can get there, or they can get it out of the ground themselves. So that drive and grit together, if you don't have those, you can have a good dog, but you're not gonna have a great dog.
Yeah, so I'm going to take a quick tangent here because that blows my mind. So a groundhog will like dig away instead of just turning in its burrow. I always imagined a burrow being like a static chamber underground, but I never thought that they could excavate away from the dogs.
Yeah, they're diggers.
It's amazing.
They will get to the smallest spot they can to try to get away from the dog, and we have it on camera. You stick a camera in there and they start caving in the tunnel when the dogs come.
Is it like an endoscope kind of thing?
For the camera?
Yeah.
Sticking GoPros in there.
And, oh, that's awesome.
Breaking open on the side of a tube or a tunnel.
Yeah.
And you can kind of watch it like it's on TV. It's pretty cool.
I would love to see that. Yeah. I have a fascination with this. I thought beagle hunting was the opposite of what I do, but no, this is the opposite of what I do. And you use one of my kind of dogs, which I love. That's awesome. Yes. Shows you how versatile they can be. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that, those two together just kind of sums it up for me.
Grit and drive. You want a dog that's ready to go in there, no questions asked, and also be tough and hold it down. I love that.
Yeah, in size is very important to us. We want a smaller dog, and for our train here in Michigan, 11.5, 12-inch dogs ideal. But if you got the drive and the grit in a dog, size, they'll be able to push through.
All right, so I got another question for you. If you were to build your perfect Jack Russell Terrier, what would it be? What would it look like? This is the foundation for moving forward.
Yeah, this is kind of a difficult question because it's such a versatile little dog. They have so many different animals that they pursue. So there's a lot of different dogs to put together to make the perfect dog that's able to keep up digging after a groundhog, one that's got enough structure and bone and depth to engage in a large raccoon and, a fox. Fox is just as big as a lot of these dogs. So all three of those animals are very much, they're all different. And mm-hmm. It takes a different dog to be really good at each one of those. So to kind of combine all those together, I'm looking to try to find a dog that's 11.5 to 12 inches at the shoulders, a nice spannable chest.
Define spannable chest.
If you take your hands and you make a circle with them, tips of your fingers, and that is how I span a chest.
Oh, dang.
And that's not very big. If you put your hands together and look at that, that's pretty small. It's
yeah,
a little bit bigger than a softball. Maybe a football, get your hands around. So their chest needs to be very flexible, and that allows them to push tighter and get to places that they need to go.
What an amazing animal. People listening to this, take 1 second. Put your hands together. Now imagine going down a hole in the pitch black and engaging something underground, mouth to nose, and you're in an area this big. That's badass. I don't know what else to say.
It really is. And that's one of the questions that I don't know and no one can really answer is when a dog is that, it's that dark, they know when to engage, how to engage, and they do it correctly.
How do they just learn from experience by sound and smell, you think, and experience?
It's got to be a combination of smell, feel. I don't know. Some people say that, their whiskers, they can feel.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's just a combination of everything. You get a really good little dog, and this is one of the things I look for, is if they're going to latch on to the animal, they need to do it properly so that we don't have vet bills.
Yeah.
And a good dog will wait for that animal to make a mistake. And as soon as they turn their head, they make their move.
In the pitch black.
In the pitch black, you just try to imagine getting put into a room with a,
That's incredible.
A big wrestler and, what are your thoughts on that?
I can't get enough of it. I'm really holding back from geeking out at the thought.
another big thing is bone. You'll see a lot of very fine terriers that are, pets, and you get a very fine bone. It doesn't take much for an animal to put a lot of pressure on that dog and create vet bills and substantial damage to the dog. But, you know, too much bone for where I'm at. I don't need I just like a nice solid dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a good width of the chest and a nice solid body structure with a good brain between those eyes.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
I like that. That sounds pretty reasonable to me. The next question I'm going to ask you is, everybody loves their own lineage if they've been hunting them a long time like you have, but no lineage is perfect. And I think every hound hunter, part of the fun of hound hunting is like looking forward to the future. Where would you like to move your lineage of the Jack Russell Terrier forward?
I've been very lucky the last 5 years. I got a line of dogs that really works well for me. A lot of the things that I look for, I'm getting in these lines, and it's being reproduced. So if I can hold that line together, it's starting to die out. The real strong dogs in that generation and pedigree, they're really, unfortunately, a lot of them have passed. And there's very few in this country to work with that have that pedigree that I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, keeping that line going as long as I can and as tight as I can to produce a dog that is great for my conditions. You know, that's my goal, is to be able to carry these lines on and produce all the things that we mentioned before.
So you breed pretty tight, I assume. Are you keeping a line breed, or are you bringing in some other genetics sometimes to outcross?
In Jack Russell's, it's very tough. The number of dogs that are in this country that are working and to working that how I like them is very few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm going to try to keep it fairly tight.
Do you foresee that being an issue down the line in 20 years?
I do. I think the way that the Jack Russells are going, unfortunately, there's becoming fewer and fewer. So for me, it's very important to educate and, you know, promote and protect this breed. So if I can, you know, help others to understand a good quality working dog, you know, that's very important to me, and I take mm-hmm. that as a passion.
Absolutely.
So in 10, 15 years, I hope that I can have a dog that still looks like my ideal dog that I have in my kennel today.
Well, you really answered one of my other questions I was going to ask you really nicely. I was going to say, what do you think of the future of the hunting Jack Russell Terrier? And I guess apparently you think it's waning. It's in its waning days.
It really is. If you look at the population of people that are doing this, unfortunately, a lot of them are older, and there's fewer and fewer young people getting involved in doing this. So I just jump at the opportunity for anybody if there's anybody out there that wants to try working a terrier, just hit me up. I'm excited to take new people all the time. Cause if I can just get one person, you know, sink that hook and give them a little bit of the joy that I find in these dogs, that would be, well, that just makes, you know, makes it worth it for me.
You're talking to one right now. So I plan to come. I'll bring another GoPro.
we're going to get you up here.
You know, and I was going to ask you too, to elaborate on that. Do you think it's terrier hunting as a whole that's waning, or do you think it's just these lines of Jack Russell Terriers? Cause I see a lot of Patterdale guys. I see they may be hunting a lot differently than you. What do you think? Is it terrier hunting in general, or is it
don't get me wrong. There's other lines that are doing good work. But the terrain in this country is so versatile. I mean, there's mm-hmm. different terrain, you know, this country is so big.
Yeah.
Everybody needs a little something different.
I see.
So, you know, everybody's breeding a little something to what suits them best.
Yeah.
And if I go to breed to somebody that's, you know, 15 hours away, there's a decent chance, you know, that they're not, their train's not the same as mine.
Gotcha. So you're saying your type of earth yep. dog is on the decline.
Yeah, it really is.
That's a shame.
It is.
Do you think in other parts of the world it's still going strong? I know that in Europe there's a pretty strong tradition of earth dog hunting.
It's, you know, like we hear a lot, we have to be very careful what we do and how we present it. Terrier folks need to really push pest control.
Yeah.
We're not out there hunting. We're not sending our dogs into rag on animals. We are doing pest control to manage pests. And if we can keep the good ethics behind all of this, I think we stand a chance to stand up for ourselves.
I think you're absolutely right with that. And I think that's a really important way to look at it. I never even thought of it. You're right. I mean, when you can attach these positive views and true work attached to their name, I think you're onto something.
So that's kind of my, you know, that's my future. What my future looks like is really protect, promote, and to try to do it ethically.
Mm-hmm. I guess, you're a master of answering multiple questions. Good answers. Let me ask you something. And this is a tough question. So I'm going to ask you a two-pronger. First one. If you were to move out of Jack Russell Terriers, what terrier breed do you think would suit you the best and why?
Yeah, that's a tough one. The number of dog terriers that are in this country, I would probably go to a Patterdale.
Why is that?
They have a lot. Well, there's certain lines that have lots of drive.
Yeah.
But that also needs to be controlled.
Yeah, they're a crazy little dog. Oh my gosh.
I have a real liking for border terriers, but if there's five in this country, I don't know about them and I'd like to know where they're at.
Huh.
I'd probably import a dog from across the pond.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, you know, we had Scott on and he was talking about, Scott Allen was talking about how in France and Britain, you know, they're still doing it and totally differently. So, and I would love to have you back on or in person. We can go on a hunt together. I'd like to have more explaining on how you hunt and how cool it is, all the cool gadgets. And I think people don't realize that terrier hunters are digging like 5 foot deep holes all the time to find these animals and their dogs, which is, if that's not the most manly form of hunting with dogs, I really don't know. That's super badass. I just walk and watch like super empowered speed mutants do their thing. I don't have to do any physical output whatsoever.
Yeah. It takes a little bit of physical work. You got to be prepared for the best situation and the worst situation. These little dogs get us in the darnest situation sometimes.
They're not going to back down either. That's the thing.
Right.
Well, here's the second part of my question. This can be a tough one, but as a whole, not just for your lines, as a whole, moving forward, what would you like to see with the Jack Russell breed to be improved?
I would like to see that more people that have these dogs get out and work them consistently. It seems to be kind of a, you know, an old English fantasy to have a working terrier. Forever, what reason that is, I'm not sure. And there's a lot of people that work their dogs one, two, three times a year. And I'd like to really see those folks getting out more. And I think a lot of that is there just needs to be more educated people that Definitely. Make those, you know, to get folks more comfortable.
And that's kind of our role as leaders in the hound hunting community. And I don't say ours as in you and I mean ours as everybody in this lifestyle. If we want to continue our lifestyle forward, like you said earlier, and how we've said many times on the show, you got to be a leader. You got to be bringing people out and showing what our dogs do and how much they love it and we love it and how we're still an integral part of the landscape.
Yes, definitely.
I think you're absolutely right in that regard. I see a lot of working breeds, historic working breeds, that have been diluted or denuded by the show ring. And I don't mean that there's not good show dogs that can still perform their original tasks. That's not what I mean. But like the Saluki is a classic example. There are still some lines that can be shown and win and also still catch a rabbit. But you see a lot of them dancing around the show ring with frail bones and their hair super long. And they have just, and their gait's weird. They've totally lost touch with this rugged, powerful desert hound. And I feel that a lot of people that want a little dog get a terrier as a pet. And I always kind of roll my eyes when they're upset it kills a bird or something, because those little dogs are gladiators the size of a football.
They are capable of much more than people anticipate. I think what I would like to see for the future of the breed in whole is, it's all right to do the whole show ring confirmation. But it's always such a big deal to breed to the dog that's winning in the show ring the most. And I believe that if you breed to a very solid working dog, everything will follow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fun. There's people talk about function and form. If the dog can perform in the field, everything else will follow.
Form follows function.
That's right.
I hear that often in the sighthound community, and I couldn't agree more. If you got a dog that's staying sound out there and he's catching rock hard rabbits out there on the prairie consistently, he's got to have some kind of formula right, not just under the hood, but the chassis itself. And I couldn't agree more.
That's exactly how I feel.
Last question, brother. And this is going to be one that requires a little surprise here, but what about yourself? Where do you see yourself moving forward to improve yourself as a terrier hunter and a Jack Russell Terrierman?
Big thing for me is I'm not getting any younger. So my physical abilities, I plan to, run half marathons, stay as best physical condition I can. And I wouldn't mind dabbling in maybe some other breeds.
Different styles or different terrier breeds?
Different terrier breeds wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if I could find the perfect thing that really caught my eye, I would definitely try.
The internet has made that so much better. I mean, look, you met a person who lives in Colorado and breeds sighthounds, you know?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, moving forward is just such a fun and interesting topic in hound hunting. And I think about it all the time, improving myself, improving my lines. And I've only been doing it, this is my fifth season coming up. And so I don't really have this foundation of my own lines. I've never bred my own dogs. I plan to one day, but I love to think about it. And I have a good friend and mentor who we're constantly scheming. So I love to ask these kinds of questions to people. I am going to, keep you on the line, Nate. I love talking with you, brother. Keep you in the loop. And everyone listening, I definitely intend to get up there to the Thumb of Michigan and get my thumbs around a powerful shovel and hopefully not look like a wimp with chicken legs in front of Nate while he laughs at me digging. I am the opposite of a human badger. I'm like a human Saluki. I got these long, skinny limbs. I was built to run.
After we get done with you, Seth, you'll enjoy your buggy.
Well, Nate, hey, thanks for coming on, brother. And with that, I'm just going to embarrassingly slink away and end the recording. Thanks again, brother. I appreciate it.
I just want to throw a special shout out to Nate. Thanks, Nate, for coming up. And Nate, you are the bomb. He reached out to me about maybe 3-4 months ago, and we just kind of chatted. I definitely want to get up there and hunt with him. He's definitely got some cool dogs, and I just need to work on my shoulders and biceps game by digging a little bit. You know what I mean? I need to beefing up. I got these skinny legs of a sighthound. You know what I mean?
I would be on fire. Like, my whole body would be on fire. It's just totally different muscle groups than you use, like, chasing after dogs and hitting your head on the tree in the woods.
Well, dude, you're not too far, actually. You should come with me. I just thought about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, Houndsman XP, you heard it. It's now out for the entire world. Lauren, you got to come with me now.
Come with me now. Isn't there a song that's like that? Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what young people are listening to anymore.
It's not a new song.
Oh, well, then I'm just going to use my Luddite defense. When I don't know any pop culture, anything, I just use my Luddite defense.
It's okay. You were raised in like rural Tweakerville, so it's fine.
That hurt more than you know.
Yeah. Well, hey, guys, but you've got intact teeth, so.
That's true. Actually, I just had them cleaned the day we recorded this, so they're extra clean for British Columbia. Canadians, get ready for these flashy white grills, baby. Shing!
And with that perfect segue, let's have a word from our friends at Freedom Hunters.
Houndsman XP is very proud of our partnership with the organization Freedom Hunters. Freedom Hunters is a nonprofit organization that takes America's veterans hunting from field to field, from the battlefield to a field near you when you volunteer your time to take America's warriors hunting with you and your hounds. It's easy. Go to houndsmanxp.com, click on the partnership tab, and it will take you to Freedom Hunters. You can go direct to their website to make donations at freedomhunters.org. Support America's heroes. Let's pay it back. Visit Freedom Hunters at freedomhunters.org or go to houndsmanxp.com and you can find them on our website from field to field.
That was my onomatopoeia.
Yep, love it.
I don't got anything else to add after those segments, Lauren. You got anything else you want to add to the Houndsman XP world? Besides, thanks for tuning in to our first show All Mixed Up. And that I'm excited to keep bringing out more. And we want to hear your feedback. You got anything else, Lauren?
Yeah. Thanks for bearing with us. I mean, I'm sure we're going to work out some details and kinks and whatever else as things move along and we get better at what we're doing here. But we're hoping to bring you an entertaining episode every time that is going to be different every time. So stay tuned.
Different themes, different segments, different people. We want to focus on fun. Not that we're saying Houndsman XP ain't fun, but Seth and Lauren, we are the emperors of fun. And so we want to bring cool stories and cool, fun, exciting, fresh stuff to you guys. And maybe some topics and things that we have not heard about on the main flagship show. So this is kind of a place for us to be bringing up some stuff. I want to be talking about taxidermy and some other cool, slightly off-hound topic, but still in the dog and hunting world. So stay tuned, guys. Yeah,
like utilizing our resources.
Yes.
Like taxidermy, but also, you know, what can Lauren do with a raccoon?
What can someone do? I want to bring on some chefs that talk about, well, we got a lot in the works, guys. We got a lot in the works. I don't want to spill too much out. So just stay tuned, everyone. We love working for Houndsman XP, and we really hope you guys will come to enjoy our show. Like Lauren said, it's a work in progress, and we'll get there. But Lauren, dude, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, see you next time.